Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today. You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Today's episode of The Grape Talks is brought to you by Microdose Gummies. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code GRAVE to get free shipping and 30% off your order. Links can be found in the show description, but again, that's microdose.com and code GRAVE. Today on The Grape Talks, escaping the Bothell Hell House. Linder is the man behind the story of the Bothell Hell House, a now infamous haunting in the Seattle area of Washington. The subject of much criticism and judgment, Keith has held steady in his story of what happened to him and his girlfriend while living in the house. What happened in the final days of Keith living in the house is what we're going to examine on today's episode of The Grave Talks. What happened to the previous owners of the house as well that ended in tragedy? What did Keith find out about the history of the property that the house now sits on? This is the story of how Keith views the life events that took place while living in the Bothell Hell House from a distance of time. We'll start out by asking, what does Keith feel about all the judgment that is thrown his way so frequently about his experiences in the Bothell Hell House?
So when people come to me via the internet or email, I divide them into two categories. I've learned there are two categories. And those who said what you just said, typically more often than not, are just diehard fans of the show. Mm-hmm. Zach Bagans, Ghost Adventures, Can Do No Wrong, No House is Haunted Unless They Say It Is. If they don't get evidence, therefore the house is not haunted. That's one category. The second category are those who say, anybody could have drawn on a wall. It looks like spray paint. I don't know. It's kind of attention-seeking. Those individuals I've learned over time after talking to them and vetting them like they vet me have very little understanding and knowledge of what a poltergeist is. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's nothing written about poltergeist that says when they write on your wall, in your house, on your furniture, that the writing itself has to look like it came from outer space or has to look like it's supernatural. Poltergeist, and this is easily verifiable, your listeners can go look and research poltergeist themselves. It's very documented. Poltergeists have been writing and drawing symbols on walls since the beginning of time, since man began recording. And they've always used most often than not, items in the home. So I tell people who ask me that question is you have to look closer at the wall markings. You have to look closer in how the markings were applied, the application method, and you just can't give it a glance over in a knee-jerk reaction because that's just the skeptic in you or the cynic, I should say, talking. People who are fans of Ghost Adventures or Zach Bagans, I really can't reach them because they're just diehard fans of the show. It's more entertainment than anything else when they watch the show. Only thing I can tell them is if you have a curiosity, go online and watch Demons in Seattle Uncovered. It's free on YouTube. It's an hour and a half documentary. It's put together by a paranormal team, a paranormal organization from the UK who lived in the home 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows, and I say this now in my book, in both books, Ghost Adventures are only at the house 5 hours. That's it. Mm-hmm. 5 hours. Anybody who's worth their grain and salt in the paranormal community knows 5 hours is zero.
Yeah.
It's just zero. 5 hours going after a poltergeist is negative zero. You're really not going to get much. And that's fine. So those are generally my two answers to that question.
Do you regret having them come into your house?
I used to, but not anymore. I tell people this only silver lining, and there are only a few silver linings in this ordeal, is if Ghost Adventures had came in the house and found one shriver of evidence, that's as far as I would have taken the case. Sad to say, but it's true. Mm-hmm. More data, more evidence came as a result of them not finding anything because I had to get my name back. I had to get Tina's name back. I had to get our credibility back in the eyes of so many who just viewed, well, Ghost Adventures didn't find anything, therefore it's nothing there. No, there's something there, and the evidence that came after them proves it. This is not me. These are researchers who lived in a home, the U.S. team, lived in the home for a month. They investigated the home for 8 months. And all that evidence is out there on the internet on various YouTube channels, including mine. So, yeah, I kind of say now I'm kind of glad they didn't get anything because had they got, you know, a dust particle and claimed it was an orb or something, that's as far as it would have gotten with this case. And what we learned now, like I said, the wall markings, the analysis that I did, that I thought they were going to do, we now know what that stuff is made out of.
Yeah. When you look back on that whole thing, that the whole fiasco of them coming into the house and doing their investigation, before they were even there, but when you were contacted by the producers for that show, what was your, I guess, goal of them coming? What were you hoping to get out of them coming in and investigating your house? At the end of that, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah, that's a good question, because when the producers of the show found me, they found me and Tina. We didn't find them.
Sure.
And they made it known who they were with and what they were about. And the only thing that stuck out of my, because I was new to the paranormal. I never heard the term Ghost Adventures or Zach Bagans, but I know Travel Channel.
Sure.
And they said they were affiliated with the Travel Channel. And I know enough about the Travel Channel to say, okay, they must they should have some resources available to them. They travel the world over. Mm-hmm. They go to countries, continents, investigating phenomena. Maybe they have seen these wall markings before elsewhere. Maybe they know a Catholic church or somebody who can come in. You know, there's resources.
Yeah.
And I thought that that's what they were going to do, but I was naive, though. I was equating the Travel Channel more than I was studying the term Ghost Adventures. And I later learned that one has nothing to do with the other. Mm-hmm. But it was a hard lesson. But yeah, when they told me they were going to contact or come to the house, I actually thought that it was going to be multiple revisits to the house. I know, and I've never done an investigation before, that with these spirits in our house, they can buy their time for a day. They can buy their time for half a day. They can definitely buy their time for 5 hours. And we didn't have any activity for the entire year of 2013. I wish people would really home in on that, because 2013, we didn't have any activity. We did in 2012.
Yeah.
And obviously we did in 2014 and 2015. So if we didn't have any activity in 2013, that proves spirits can buy their time or lay low or whatever they do to not present themselves, because 5 hours is nothing. So I was really hoping it would be a iterative investigation, in that, hey, we're coming on day one, but we're going to be back. We're going to bring other people, because I don't know if you remember the episode. Zach even said, we're not leaving here until we get to the truth, to the bottom of this. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't get to the bottom of anything in 5 hours.
Sure. Sure. So you have probably heard about the idea of microdosing THC before. It's become a fairly popular thing because it's legal in all 50 states. And if not, just know all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel healthier and perform better. I love these things. They're from Lumi Labs, and these microdose gummies, I use them throughout my day. There's times where I'm looking to be a little more creative. There's times where I'm looking to chill. There's times where I'm looking to have some energy. There's a microdose option for you, all different types. And our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. To me, it's just a nice, natural way to feel healthy and good. They really do taste and feel amazing. I've used them to help me kind of get in the zone when doing the podcast here or putting stuff together. I also have some to kind of let me wind down, chill out, sleep like a baby. They're all around. I would just give them a 10 out of 10. I love these things. Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code GRAVE to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description. But again, that's microdose.com and code GRAVE. Do you feel like, and this is kind of a retrospective looking back on the whole situation, that it was already judged? They already knew the angle they were going to take on your story before they even got there. Do you think they had heard your story? They had done what research they had done, what evidence, what information existed out there, and they already said going in, we're going to take the angle of, we don't believe this. This is going to be a great episode because it's different than the others. And that's how we're going to play this the whole way through. And then kind of followed that narrative over the stunning 5 hours that they spent there.
Well, they had two versions of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Had they found evidence during the short period of time that they were there, the world would have saw a different show. The world would have saw Ghost Adventures as being the hero, as the problem solver. Hey, another house we saved today.
Mm-hmm.
I truly believe they had two versions of the show, only because, keep in mind, the world only saw 45 minutes of the show. They filmed at least, and I'm adding the B-roll stuff into it, at least 5 days worth of episode.
Sure.
Because the B-roll team were there 3.5 days.
Yeah.
So they had a lot of stuff that never made it into the film that laid on the cutting room floor. Also, people have to also look at to the time period of when Ghost Adventures were at our house. Ghost Adventures were at our house in November of 2014. I forgot his name, but one of their premier or founding members had just separated from the show. I think it was Aaron or...
Okay.
One of the team members had just left the show. Also, there was a controversy coming out of Indiana of a demon house, the one that Jack made the documentary of, mm-hmm. that was hitting the paranormal airwaves almost at the same time as mine. And I believe when Jack was coming to my house, he had either expressed purchasing the house or was in the process of buying that house. So when the producers called me early November, they said, we want to be at your house in a matter of days, not weeks, not months. So I was very caught off guard about the speed in which they were. I'm like, well, you guys are going to come in a matter of weeks And they're like, yeah, we'll be there. But in the time period, because I know from talking to people who are connected to the show, who were very interested and surprised when one member left the show. And at that time, Ghost Adventures was getting a lot of criticism from the paranormal community as they make it look so easy. They make it look like every investigation yields results. Mm-hmm. And again, they were catching it from both ends. And then when the other guy left, the question was, were some of the episodes faked? I don't know if it were or were not, but I know the question was asked. And then here comes Keith and Tina with this house in Bothell. And we're going to go down there. If we find something good, like I said, we got two demon houses. Zach is, he's going to save the day. He's got the Indiana house, and he's got this house in Bothell. But if he doesn't find anything, and then a team member has already left the show, then no, we're gonna turn the show around to make it look like that they either over exaggerated or faked everything. And I've got it on good authority by talking to people close and connected to Ghost Adventures and the Travel Channel that was on everybody's mind prior to coming to our house.
That's what I wonder about, is just that being the mindset of every episode is, you know, oh my God, we're finding stuff, and it's, you know, it's a home run every time. If the production almost had to say, we need to throw one in here that doesn't get results.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I wonder about that when we look at the timeline of everything. All right. Well, I don't want to hang on all that for too long, but I thought we needed to add some more time onto that topic, because I wanted you to get your voice out there on this, on the record for the audience, for the critics, for all that, of just hearing, you know, what you get bombarded with, you know, I'm sure on a regular basis. I want to move back onto your story and onto the house. You had alluded to in our previous interview, and I encourage the audience to go back and listen to our previous interview with you. And then we also talked to the investigators that you had talked about from the UK on a follow-up episode and heard their story and their experiences. Yep. So everyone who wants to really dive deeper into this, I encourage, go back and listen to those episodes first before continuing on here, because this is really the continuation of the story. You had talked about the previous family that lived in the house very briefly, and that you believe there was something else going on there prior to you and your girlfriend at the time finding residence there. Can you expound upon that a bit more on what you believe had gone on in the house prior to you taking residence?
Well, yeah, I had contacted a family who had lived in the house 5 years before me and Tina moved in. I contacted the wife, the mother, through Facebook. And it was really a Hail Mary, only because we kept getting mail delivered to us of previous tenants who lived in the home. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things churches and clergy and paranormal teams ask us is, have you talked to people who lived in the house before you? So one night I Google searched her on Facebook, and I found her, and I sent her an email, a chat message, and she replied, and she was very reluctant, very nervous about replying. I told her who I was, where I was currently living, but I didn't tell her what was happening. The only thing I told her was, we're living in the house that you used to live in. We're having some weird things happen. I didn't go any further than that. And I asked her specifically, have y'all had anything happen? Have y'all experienced anything? Long story short, it took her 3 months, I believe, to get back with me to the answer, because she was very hesitant. Only because the night I contacted her, her and her husband had just reconciled and they broke up in the house. Mm-hmm. And she felt it was very coincidental or weird that the day I'm pinging her through Facebook, this stranger that her and her husband have now reconciled, when in fact it was the house that she said, not me, that broke them up. Mm-hmm. So she comes back to me 3 months later and really drills down on what activity they had. And my mouth was just dropping on my keyboard, because everything that she's saying, we've already experienced. She talked about waking up, her and her family, their nanny, the living nanny, and finding all the kitchen cabinet doors open. She talked about the loud banging. She talked about the phantom footsteps. She made a point to reiterate more than once about the TV channels changing by themselves, the lights going off and on. And the one that really made my eyebrow raise was she said her son, whose room was my office, my infamous office, saw shadowy figures out the corner of his eye all the time. And he had got mysteriously sick. He had developed a rarest form of meningitis where the doctors could not ascertain the root cause. And she said the house to her and her family was like a living hell. She said the house felt like it was alive. One night or one day, she was outside on the patio having a cigarette. She had some baby formula on the stove and her infant daughter in a high chair, and the glass sliding door slammed shut between her and her child and locked her out the house. Baby's wailing, and the only way she can get back in, what she said, where she had to throw a rock through the glass to break the sliding door to get back into the home. And so she's telling me all this stuff summer of 2014, and me not once telling her what we've experienced until after she divulged everything that she had went through. So that was kind of the first indication for me and Tina to know that we're not crazy. Mm-hmm. We didn't bring the activity with us. It didn't follow us here. Unfortunately, it was here when we got here. Mm-hmm. And this was 2008, 2009 when they lived in the home. Me and Tina moved in May of 2012. And I believe in my book one, toward the end, because I didn't know when I finished book one that there would be a book two, that she successfully, after 4 to 5 attempts in the home, of suicide attempts I'm talking about, in the home, she unfortunately was successful in 2016 of finally committing suicide.
This woman committed suicide in the home?
No, outside the home.
Outside the home. Oh, my gosh.
Outside. She had had 4 attempts inside the home, 2008,
okay.
2009.
Okay.
And 2016, when I moved out in May of 2016, mm-hmm. I reached out to her again about August, September 2016 to give her the evidence that the UK guys found.
Yeah.
And we were still Facebook friends.
Sure.
But I haven't been getting her news feeds for a while, so I went to her wall mm-hmm. and saw her memorial, her son, her oldest son. Mm-hmm. I left a memorial on the wall. And, she has successfully committed suicide.
Wow. Before, obviously, that happened while you were communicating with her, what was her reaction when you told her about your experiences?
She was very empathetic, remorseful, because we related automatically on a dime in the sense of I had already experienced everything she told me. And then she was like, yeah, that's us. And she said, get out whenever you can. The house broke us up, her and her husband. Mm-hmm. And she was very supportive in the sense of, if y'all don't get out, I hope y'all make it. I hope you got a good support system around you. What was horrible for her in the home was they didn't never really know what was causing everything. It just, in her words, and I'll quote her, it just felt like it was a dark cloud over the house. This is a newly built home. This home was built in 2005. They were having activity in 2008, but they didn't really drill down the way I did. See, me, my IT background and how I'm wired mentally, I really drilled down and went after the phenomenon. There's pros and cons to that, especially where poltergeists are concerned. And for them, it was just more reactionary mm-hmm. to the phenomena. And living their lives, where me, it was reactionary / a lot of proactiveness. Smudging, saging, bringing in cameras, bringing in investigators, churches, house exorcism, house blessings, which can ratchet up the activity, and did. It became a fighting match between us versus them, whereas her, Rhonda, and her family, they just reacted to whatever phenomena erupted And on a scale of 1 to 5, probably just a 1 is what they have experienced, where we experienced the 5 with the burning Bibles, the throwing of the objects, and stuff like that.
When you say it was reactionary for her, how did they react when things would happen?
Frightened. I mean, she was definitely, when she retold me the story about the sliding door, she was definitely frightened. Her nanny quit. When nanny, one day her, Rhonda and her husband were out of town, so it was just the nanny and the kids there. And the nanny woke up the next morning to a series of loud banging, came downstairs and saw all the kitchen cabinet doors open. Me and Tina seen that 20 quintillion times, and you never get used to it. And the nanny quit. The nanny drove her and the kids to Yakima, Washington, which is about a 5-hour drive, and never returned to the house. Rhonda told me one night they were there and it was a series of loud banging. You know, just phantom noises. Sounds like there's a party going on in the attic, but there isn't. And they woke up the next day and there was these strange burnt marks into the rugs in every room in the house. Every room had a pattern, almost identical burnt pattern, on the rugs of the floor. They could not explain or why or what. They just thought the house was weird. She never used the term demon or ghost. She just said the house was alive. That was her definition of the house. It was, and I agree with it. The house was alive. The house breathed. It echoed. It hummed. It shook. It vibrated. It seemed like it was watching you all the time, no matter what room you're in. Wake, sleep, shower, shaving, all the above. It just felt like the house was watching you 24/7.
You said that she said that the house broke her and her husband up and broke their marriage apart. Yes. What was it, the stress of being in an environment that's constantly moving on you, essentially, you know, just you're out of control.
And once again, I can identify with, because when me and Tina got the house in May of 2012, we were on cloud 9. I had just got a great job promotion, great salary increase, going 2 years, going on 3 years in my relationship. We had zero issues. And most people, when they move into a house, you know, you're coming in, it's nice, it's all that. But she said over time, she became depressed. No reason, just did.
Yeah.
Became suicidal, obviously. The son got sick, so medical bills start piling up due to his illness. She got laid off and therefore had to become a work-from-home mom. She tried to get a business off the ground in the home. The bills got so high due to the son's illness that her husband became an Alaska fisherman. And so he was away 4 or 5 months out the year, and he was homing in, sending the money back, wiring it back, and talking to her. But she developed, you know, an addiction to pain meds, to stress relief. Our son's sick. The medical bills are piling up. And you got this house that could be the root cause of all of it, but you don't know that. I mean, you don't know that. And the same thing happened to me and Tina when that activity started escalating in 2014. Because you're vexing, you're in that vexation phase of the poltergeist, where you're sleep deprived, you're angry, your aunts, you don't know who's coming to your house to help you. The priest has canceled an appointment. The paranormal team that showed up to your house forgot the battery. They didn't bring their equipment with them, so they got to drive all the way back across town. They're late, and so you get frustrated, and the poltergeist just piles more things on top of it. He just, you know, piles more things on top of all that. And so, yeah, that led to their breakup, and had a huge role in me and Tina's breakup, too.
Sure. I know after you guys had broken up, you still stayed in the house for quite some time. The lease was still there, and you stayed, and you had more investigators come in, and they did their own investigations. And like you said, that information is out there online. After all of this is put together, the investigations have gone through. What's on your mind as far as why is this house haunted? I'm sure that's a big question that's lingering. You know this stuff is going on. You don't necessarily need another person to verify it for you, but you probably want to know why. This is a new house. There hasn't been many people in it. What on earth is causing it? Did you ever get a sufficient answer in your mind on that question?
Yes, I got a strong, sufficient answer, which is sort of what gave rise to book two, because you're right. When paranormal teams came in, I'm talking about after Ghost Adventures, who, found evidence, who lived in the home. And even they, I mean, most paranormal teams will tell you, they come into the home. Rule number one, you come in to relieve the house occupants of their stress. You want to verify the phenomena. You want to be able to come to a logical conclusion or explanation as to what's causing it. But you don't leap to the conclusion that it's paranormal until the evidence says that. Well, the evidence in this house says, yeah, this is paranormal. This is what Steve Mayer, parapsychologist, found, Don Phillips, Nikki Novell, and others. And therefore, you move to phase two is, okay, how can we make the activity stop? How can we make the house livable for the house occupants? So you come up with a game plan for that, and whether that works or not is to be determined. Poltergeists are tricky. Phase three, which sort of helps phase two, is why is the house from hell? Why this house, out of the 80 other lots on this block, you know, behaving this way? Did somebody die? Did somebody get killed, murdered? And they went through all that checklist and verified and went to the county records office and looked at all that stuff. It came up empty. The only two things, and I put this in book two, that stuck out like a red herring goes back to Rhonda and her family when she lived in the home and what the city of Bothell was in the 1800s.
That wraps up part one of our latest interview with Keith Linder about the Bothell Hell House. In part two of our conversation, we'll ask Keith what happened on the land of the Bothell Hell House in the 1800s that may have led to the dark activity that Keith experienced in the house. What did Keith find when he looked up all of the 911 call records on the home? Has Keith found other evidence around Bothell of similar activity taking place? Was anyone able to make the activity stop or slow down in the house? Looking back, is there anything that Keith did while living at the house that he believed stirred up the energy? And what is Keith doing today to deal with the spirits that have indeed followed him out of the Bothell Hell House? We'll discuss all of that and more in part two of our interview with Keith Linder. His second book is now available on Amazon and wherever books are sold. To hear part two of our interview, become a Gravekeeper. That's a supporter of our program. Sign up to become one at patreon.com/thegravetalks or go to thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.